Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel, and proud member of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. My name is Aramithius, and this week we're carrying on our look at The Truth in Sequence, looking at Volume 2, which is one of the shorter volumes in this particular set of books. But first of all, I just wanted to say a big thank you to Matt, who has become my latest patron over at patreon.com/writteninuncertainty. My patrons get to see all the notes that I make for each episode, which are all up and debatable before the podcasts go live, as well as getting early access to all my content. So if you want to see all my stuff early, if you want to be able to see my creative process and as I write things and think about how I put all these episodes together, head over to patreon.com/writteninuncertainty. And thank you ever so much once again to Matt for his support. Oh, and one quick note, Matt, I didn't actually have your username or anything when you signed up. Could you please let me know who you are on Discord so that I can add you to the patrons user group so you can get the benefits there as well? And now on to Truth and Sequence. Volume 2 is one of the shorter volumes, which goes on a bit more about quite who and what Set is and what names are, thinking about how names work within the Elder Scrolls and what they mean or don't mean or should mean. And to kick that off, I wanted to start off with some clarifications that I found on some things I said in Volume 1. The idea of the fourth Torbillion, I've actually found out what a Torbillion is now. It's a portion of a watch that was originally designed to counteract the effects of gravity and various other spatial pulls on the mechanism, so you wouldn't get things slowed down because gravity was pulling on the mechanisms. And you can also get one Torbillion is the most common way of doing it, but two Torbillions counters not just the pull downwards, but the pull in multiple directions at once. So what a fourth Torbillion is a little interesting. It's not something that's really possible in a traditional clock. You could potentially have a third Torbillion that would counter things during time, maybe, or make sure that the clock stays accurate throughout time, if that was even possible. And a fourth Torbillion, I'm not 100% sure, but if we think about it in terms of spatial dimensions, the fourth dimension is, well, the fourth dimension is time. The fifth dimension is often seen to be one that goes beyond our current world. So the realm of spirit, maybe. But if that is the case, or even if it's done throughout time, either of those I think fit, that the idea of a fourth Torbillion is the idea of keeping a clock wound and steady and keeping its motions all organized throughout another set of dimensions, so throughout the realm of spirit. There's part of me that thinks, is this some kind of Politburo, maybe, or kind of correct thinking office that Deldry's Morvain is being part of here? I don't know for sure. I don't think we see the term anywhere else in the Elder Scrolls, but given what a Torbillion is, I think that's probably something close to the role that she's supposed to be portraying here. And now to the sermon itself. By the word I grind the gears. The will of Sothasil is the chrononymic will, the nameless will. And I want to stop there for a second and just unpack the word chrononymic. It's a little bit bizarre that it's said as a nameless will, because chrononymic is talking about chrono in the sense of time. That one's fairly obvious, but the notion of a nimic in the Elder Scrolls is a name. A protonymic is a basic name for someone, a true name, if you want to go to a semi-demonology type route, that there is an underlying name for something, and that's their protonymic. So is Sothisil here claiming that he is the will of time? I don't honestly know. Or is Deldry's claiming that he's the will of time? It feels something like that. Or at least claiming time as an identity, because names here aren't held in particularly high regard. For what is name? The divine metronome tells us that name is the wedge that pries gear from pinion, the residue of Lorcan's great lie that loosens the wheel chain and corrodes the frame. And now this sentence ties in quite nicely with some of the things that happen in the 36 Lessons of Vivek. You've got the notion of Sithis being the start of all true houses, which is also quoted in the book Sithis, I think. Or Sithis is the start of the house, something like that. And to be a house, to be a group of people, to be an us, in the truest sense of the word, is to be a not them. Sithis is the start of all true houses because he's a thing that divides, that separates, and makes different. And the name here is what's doing the same thing. It's prying gear from pinion. It's driving difference between things. If you can name something, you can say it's this rather than that. And so by that notion, separate things, which keys in a little with Kantian philosophy, I suppose, if you want to look at how Kant thinks about perception. He thinks that the outer world itself is just a manifold of intuition, that you simply receive a bunch of sense data and can't really differentiate between the two. But then you have the forms of intuition, as he calls them, which are space and time. And that's an imposition of your mind and the way that you're processing the differences between everything, because that's the way your mind is structured to work. And it's the almost the naming process that happens later on, the application of concepts, which helps you understand what all these separate objects are, which is driving very much at the same thing. It's the naming process that is the division, is the understanding, and is a fundamental part of how the world currently works. And here it's getting linked to Lorcan's great lie, because Lorcan is the child of Sithis, and it's being claimed to be a bad thing because it destroys things, it corrupts things. The Etarda gears named each and each in their way. Our lessers see this as a kindness, but the mainspring ever wound sees it as a curse, rooted in selfish pride. I'm not really sure who the lessers are here, because both traditional Mannish and Dunmurry theological views see the creation of Nirn and the way that it was built as a good thing, that men typically see it as a blessing that they exist at all, and the Dunmer see it as a place of testing and an opportunity to move beyond it, to roughly paraphrase some of the stuff that gets put into the monomyth. But here, I'm not sure who the lessers are supposed to be. It's a radically different view from the mainstream Dunmurry view. And so is this something that encourages the clockwork apostles to look down on the tribunal worshipping Dunmer and the processes that led them to Daedra worship? I'm not sure. I don't really think so, because later on in the Truth and Sequence, there is part where Deldries asks the forgiveness of the tribunal. So they obviously play some sort of a part within Deldries' understanding of the world, and potentially within how Set is talking about things to whoever he talks to when he talks to people. So I don't think that it's entirely that we're disregarding the Dunmer here. It's possibly something to do with anti-Mannish sentiment, if it's anything. But it is also seen as a bad thing, which is a fundamentally Altmer-y thing to think about. It's a thing that you will see the Altmer viewpoints expressed, that Auriel was tricked into being part of the world, and that the material world is a bad thing. To name is to cleave one from another, and there again we have the separation, which is part of Sithis. It is the death of a Nuit convergence and the Nirn ensuing. the misassembled dragon that breathes dry falsehood and whose name is Multitude. The mentioning of dragon here makes me think Akatosh again, but it's also associated with Lorcan's great lie. So is Akatosh being put in as a co-conspirator here? It's a little strange, particularly given that the ideas of time earlier on are a bit more positively put. But I'm not really sure. It feels like Deneldries is trying to blame Akatosh as well as Lorcan. And I also want to flag something here about Multitude as well. You've got the dry falsehood whose name is Multitude. Multitude as opposed to one, a singular thing. This is equivalent-ish to a philosophical position called monism, which is stating that there's only one substance throughout the world, that everything is roughly the same thing. We talked about it a bit last week when we talked about the paradox of distance, but we've also got the idea from philosophers like Spinoza, who say that there's only one substance and just different expressions of that substance within the world. Spinoza doesn't entirely say that there's just one type of substance. Well, he doesn't say one type of substance, but he doesn't say there's only one thing in the world, which is kind of what's being said here. But it feels a bit like a similar expression, that if there's only one type of thing in the world, then it can only act according to one will, and that will be unified, will be a nuic, and so on and so forth. And so it feels like the actual truth that lies behind all of the Multitude and the misassembled dragon and the Etada Gears is something singular, is a singular will, a singular world maybe, and potentially made out of one set of all the same stuff. There is only one name that is not name, Set, the convergent clockwork god, whose will pumps like a piston into both then and after. This reminds me both of Sothisil's anticipation, Azura, who we'll get to in a second, and Eastern philosophy-ish. There's some expressions of Eastern philosophy, or at least my understanding of it, that talks about a name of a being who is the same thing as the whole world. So you'll see talk of things like Brahman being the one thing that is the world. And so Set may be being put into a similar situation here, although it's not quite the same thing. Brahman is the world in Hindu cosmology. It is his dream that is the world. But Set isn't being put in the position of the dreamer here. He's just the one who is fixing the world and knows where the world is going. He has some kind of hidden knowledge that everyone else doesn't have, but he's not identified with the world itself. Although he does seem to be the kind of the glue holding it together. We've got the pumping like a piston into both then and after, which feels similar to Azura's role as Queen of the Twilight. You've got a bit of before and a bit of after and so on that kind of happen because of Azura's middle place between day and night. And Sothisil as the next step on from Azura, if we're to understand Tribune theology that way, is taking a similar role here. He's being what's called liminal. He's taking that in-betweenness and making them into something else. Sothisil, father of mystery, whose heart drives the wheels eternal and whose blood oils the all-axle. And quite apart from just a lot of talk about wheels and gears and mechanisms that feel all very, very clockpunk and so very, very Sothisil, this reminds me a little of the tower, the idea that the tower is the fundamental structure of the Arabis. This is possibly an expression of that, the idea of an axle being part of a wheel, and just makes me think a bit of that kind of that wheel and tower structure of the Arabis. If you want to hear that unpacked a little bit more, I talk about that in episodes 4 and 5 of this podcast, I think, when I talk about Chim and the towers. It's something that gets scattered a little bit throughout the more complex bits of the Elder Scrolls cosmology, so checking out a few of my episodes, you'll probably find something about the tower in most of them. And this is potentially also claiming something about Sotha Sil, similar to what the Psijiks are trying to do in the book The Old Ways. They claim that they want to promote change where it's positive and builds things up and makes the world a better place. Sotha Sil doesn't entirely agree with the Psijiks from what we can tell. It doesn't really feel like their kind of philosophy that he's pushing forward, but if he is the thing that's driving the wheel, making things turn and forming the function of the tower, then you've also got the idea that he's just trying to promote change and forward motion in the same way that the Psijiks are. So there's some sympathy there, even if he's not actually talking purely in terms of their philosophy or entirely agreeing with it. C. The divine engine, whose mind merges they and we, and births Nern ensuing. And again, we have the liminal stuff here. You've got this merging of different concepts and bringing together which Sotha Sil represents. And if you want to get a little conspiratorial here, it's also potentially a reference to the House of We, which is a community of love that's referenced in Coda. That's the dwelling together in a new dream and a new way of doing things. There's a lot of talk about new worlds in the Truth and Sequence. I don't think that Nern Ensuing is the next dream, because it's still using the old Nern. There's no overturning of the Arabis as such, which you would see if we were going along with the notion of Nern Ensuing being a new Amaranth and a new cosmology that way. So Nern Ensuing and Tamriel Final and all that lot are something else, but it's something that's again a joining together, a reconvergence, which again, I've said this already and I'll say it again, it feels quite Murrish in how its expression is, because it's wanting to go back to what was before. It's climbing back up the subgradients tree and merging everyone's souls potentially back together to create this one unified thing, moving back towards Anu the Everything, I suppose. Lesser wills are wisps of smoke, born and lost in a sea of endless sky. Lost children whose freedom is death. For what is freedom, child of the tribunal? The counter lever to slavery? No. Have you not heard the words in sequence? The chrononymic will is the pendulum that swings only once. It cannot do otherwise. The pendulum that swings only once is a fundamental contradiction and reminds me again of the phrase the mainspring ever wound, which is a contradiction in itself. Mainsprings must unwind in order to actually work. So it's another expression of both the unmoved mover in terms of a creator, but I also think it feels a bit like things like the riddle of what is the sound of one hound clapping, things like that, that you can have these unitary concepts that express some truth about the world that don't really make much sense on their own, but are trying to express some fundamental nature that underlies everything. And the pendulum that swings only once also suggests one motion of travel. There is only progress, there is only forward motion, so to speak, which is in line with how Sotha Sil sees the world in very deterministic terms, that hence the it cannot do otherwise. And that, in essence, is claiming that we do have this kind of determinism, which we'll get to in a second. To swing twice would break one intention from another and prove the blasphemy of two. As Padme is an illusion, so too is the named will. For what is choice if not chaos? What is free will if not the lack of order, vulgar and triumphant? Now this reminds me a little bit of chaos theory. It might just be that I'm word hunting here, but bear with me. Chaos theory is the idea that lots of small differences in the preconditions produce big differences in the end result, which means that you can't predict what's going on, and so you can't predict what's going on. And that's pretty much the essence of choice, the ability to say, well, not this, but that, and move on from what should be an obvious thing to something that's not obvious. And frankly, yes, the free will as a lack of order does make total sense as well. There's also potentially the idea of a deterministic world here. You read some people like, I think Sam Harris is probably the biggest current exponent of this sort of thing, that the idea that your brain has already decided what you're doing before you're aware of it. So there is no real free will. And so you can't choose. Everything is a perfectly determined universe. The true wheels spin clockwise, ever clockwise. In the unity of the Nern ensuing, each belongs to all and all shall belong to none, save Tamriel Final. And that again feels a bit like the I am and I am all we that is referenced in Coda. Going back to the House of We, everyone belongs to everyone else, everyone is part of the same whole. Which is again part of the everything is the one thing contradiction that's kind of driving the majority of the worldview in Truth and Sequence. Anuvanasi. So lay down your cheap burdens, child. Shall I do thus? Such choice is delusion. Give yourself to the pursuit of unity, for in the end you cannot do otherwise. By the word, I wind the gears. And this final section completely signs up to the deterministic point of view, and it's not only determinism, it's saying we will win in the end. It's saying that you should probably sign up for the pursuit of unity because you can't fight it, that we will have unity in the end, it's inevitable. It's an interesting expression into the kind of the free will determinism argument, and something that kind of leverages off a position that I've had on this for a while, that if everything is determined, well, act like everything's determined. Go on, do it. Now. You can't. You physically can't do it. Because you acting as though every motion is determined is pretty much the same thing as acting as though you don't, because you can't see all of the ends. You can't know what you should, in inverted commas, do. And so the idea of whether something is determined or not, in my view, is a pointless question, because it doesn't impact your practical reality. Whereas this is saying, this is a foregone conclusion, so sign up and join us now, actively work towards the thing that's only going to work anyway, and be on the right side of history. I like it as a counter-argument, because it's saying, well, we're inevitable, so help us. But quite how true that is, particularly when Mundus is the grey maybe, when everything's supposed to be all uncertain and undecided and variable, I'm not sure. Particularly given what we know of the ultimate fate of the Clockwork City, it feels a little kind of Ozymandias-like, I suppose. But it's still a really interesting perspective, nonetheless, and frankly a refreshing one, compared to what we see elsewhere in the series, because it's so radically different. And that's it for this week. I do hope you've enjoyed going through this second volume of The Truth and Sequence with me. It's been a little shorter than the previous one, and we'll see how we go as to whether we roll shorter volumes into a single episode, but I think this is probably enough for this week. So thank you ever so much for joining me. If you like this, please follow on your favourite podcatcher and join the Written Uncertainty Discord and the Robots Radio Network Discord, which both of which are in the show notes. And until next time, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and hosted by Aramithius. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky and Jeremy Saul. You can check out Jan's work on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northerner Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Hey friends, this is Robots, the creator of the Robots Radio Podcast Network and host of the two original shows on the network, the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. These two shows have rocketed up the iTunes charts. They both together have over 150 five-star reviews in only a couple of months, with bite-sized episodes that take you step-by-step through the background of the games and the game worlds. They're thought-provoking, well-produced, and a lot of fun. I recommend you go check them out at robotsradio.net or on any podcast, reader, podcatcher, whatever you use, iTunes, Spotify. Again, that's the Fallout Lorecast and the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, available everywhere.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Brad. We're lifelong friends.
And the hosts of the Film and Whiskey Podcast. This is the show where each week we review a classic movie and a glass of whiskey.
That's right. Every week we go in-depth on a well-known movie while sampling the best from the world of scotch, bourbon, and more.
Because nothing goes better with strong opinion than equally strong liquor.
Bob's a movie nerd.
Brad's an average Joe.
But together, we give fresh insights and hot takes on the world of movies and spirits.
So check out the Film and Whiskey Podcast,
part of the Robots Radio Network.